Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. 39 businesses in downtown San Antonio reported damages Sunday night. Protesters speaking out against the police killings of African Americans sparked by the death of George Floyd. It all began peacefully, but then near the Alamo, violence broke out, leading to broken windows and looted store fronts. Were you at the protest this weekend? We'd like to hear from you. What brought you out to the streets of San Antonio? Did you accomplish what you wanted to accomplish? What do you want this protest to say? Call in. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at TPRSource. A little bit later on, we will be hearing from San Antonio Police Chief William McManus and also from the mayor of San Antonio, Ron Nuremberg. But first, let's bring in two of the Texas Public Radio reporters who were on the scene that night, Saturday night. And Dominic Walsh, Anthony Walsh joins us. He's a reporter for Texas Public Radio, covered the protest at the Alamo. Also with us, Jolene Almendares. She is a freelance reporter for Texas Public Radio, and she covered the Travis Park protest for TPR. Dominic, Anthony Walsh, welcome to The Source. Tell me, what did you see that night?
Thanks, Dave. So the planned event was at Travis Park. That's where you saw hundreds, if not thousands, of protesters speaking out against the police killing of George Floyd. They marched from there to the San Antonio Public Safety Headquarters. At the same time, you also had a group at the Alamo called This is Texas Freedom Force. Some of the protesters from the other area came over to the Alamo. They chanted the name of George Floyd. Here's what that sounded like.
And this is where, Dominic?
The Alamo. So this is after protesters from Travis Park came over to the Alamo. Now, the backdrop of this is there's graffiti at the Alamo a few days ago. That's why you had that armed group, This is Texas Freedom Force, there. Brandon Burkhart is their president. Here's what he said about their purpose defending the Alamo.
Out here because of the vandalism that took place on the Alamo Cenotaph. Our mission is to protect the Alamo, protect the Alamo Cenotaph. So we have nothing to do with the other protesters over there. We're not doing this in response to them. We're doing this because we want to make sure that these two things are safe, which is our most important historical monument.
Gotcha.
Well, we're angry about it. We're extremely angry. I mean, that is the tomb to the Alamo defenders. That's our unknown soldier tomb right there. So you imagine somebody spray painting the unknown soldier tomb, how people would react to that. That's the same response we have to this, especially since we spent 4 years trying to save this monument from the city of San Antonio.
Okay, so first off, this is who again?
This is Brandon Burkhart. He's the president of a group called This is Texas Freedom Force. They were gathered at the Alamo, heavily armed, several dozen of them, while the protest at Travis Park was going on. They said it wasn't a response to the protest, rather an initiative to defend the Alamo after the graffiti, but their event description on Facebook did mention those protests by name.
I did watch their live Facebook feed. It was pretty hyped up. There was a lot of energy on their side, aggressive talk about taking action against the protesters in a violent way. So they engaged with the protesters in a pretty hostile manner.
At first, the leaders of the group were telling their members to not engage with protesters who walked up to the group. But throughout the day, several conversations did play out. As more protesters started to approach the scene, growing into the hundreds of numbers, you started to see police move in and separate the groups. We spoke to one protester named Treston Patton. Here's what he said about his anger against the armed militia members and the way the police were defending them.
There is a group of people out here that are standing with weapons facing us, and I get their purpose is to protect the Alamo, but in America right now, there's a face of racism that's geared towards black people, and the face of racism looks exactly like the face that are standing there with weapons pointed at us. They're standing there with not only with weapons pointed at us, but they're standing there in a stance that that if you're at war, you would stand that you would stand in that stance pointing your weapons at people. And my problem is these situations shouldn't be allowed to happen.
Now, I want to bring in Jolene Almendarez into the conversation. She was covering the protest at Travis Park. And Jolene, welcome to The Source.
Oh, thanks.
Tell me really what the protesters were telling you about what brought them out that night.
Right. Well, actually, I'd like to kind of pop in and chime in. When I got to the park at about 4 o'clock, that was an hour before it was supposed to start. There were about 100 people there already. And by 4:30, whatever the militia members say at Alamo, there were about 8 of them actually kitty-cornered to the park who came to Travis. So what the protesters were telling me in regard to the George Floyd protesters was that they really wanted to make sure that people knew that Black Lives Matter. It was something I heard again and again and again. And people said that they wanted to see change in the way police officers interact with and treat Black people in the city and in the nation.
And was it really just limited to that? Because there have been other protests. There have been other, unfortunately, this is a sequence of African-Americans who have died at the hands of law enforcement for one reason or another. Was this a accumulation of all that, or was it other things too?
Yeah, it was an accumulation of all that. It definitely wasn't limited to George Floyd. People can say his name, say her name, and listed the names of many Black people who've died at the hands of the police recently and in the past few years. The energy was just, it was really incredible. So this happened before the riots broke out, before those huge confrontations happened over at the Alamo. And just the scene was so, it was really peaceful. It was really loving. You know, people were angry. They had a lot of grievances. But it was really led with a lot of organization. From where I was at the beginning of the day, it really did seem like this was all going to be a big march. And what happened later in the evening was just really shocking after that. Everything was just so peaceful from the march down to the police headquarters. There were so many police officers at the end of the march also, just interacting really well with protesters at the beginning of the day. So,
Dominic Anthony Walsh, do you think that we were lucky that this didn't get worse? I mean, we had armed protesters in front of the Alamo. I mean, they're carrying semi-automatic machine guns, right, and a lot of weaponry. One person losing their cool. I hate to be someone who's trying to think about the worst possibility, but that it would have been disastrous.
Protesters had that possibility in mind. You heard several members from the George Floyd protesters encouraging other protesters to maintain peace. You heard one person at one point say over a megaphone, they have guns, calm down. Nonetheless, that was the first violence we saw that day, and several guns were dropped on the ground. Fortunately, no shots were fired.
All right, Dominic Anthony Walsh, I want to thank you, reporter for Texas Public Radio. Also, Jolene Almendarez, she's a freelance reporter working with TPR and covering the Travis Park protest. We're going to go to a break. Our phone lines are open. If you have a question or a comment, the number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. We do have San Antonio Police Chief William McManus ready to come on the air to talk about what happened over the weekend and how we can learn from these events. Also, we plan on hearing from San Antonio Mayor Ron Nuremberg. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We are in the wake of a historic weekend where protesters in San Antonio, about 5,000 of them, were on the streets of the city, fueled by outrage over the death of George Floyd. He was in custody of the Minneapolis Police Department when he died, and San Antonio residents, along with residents across the country, across cities across the country, took to the streets. It happened here, and that's what's disturbing as well. And our San Antonio Police Department responded. We're now joined by SAPD Department Chief William McManus. And Chief McManus, welcome to The Source.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
So, you had two of your officers injured, I understand. Is that correct?
No, it was actually four.
What is the status?
Well, two were hit in the head with bottles. One officer was hit in the head. Hit in the knee with a brick, and the fourth officer was hurt somewhere in his lower extremities. I'm not sure exactly where, but he was injured as well. So a total of four.
And they're okay now?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So, obviously y'all have trained, you have plans. What happened over the weekend, it was not something totally unexpected. You plan for these types of events. How did your planning prepare you for what actually happened over the weekend?
Well, as you just said, we anticipated that there was going to be violence based on what was going on around the country and other cities, especially here in Texas. Austin, Dallas, and Houston were having some violent protests. So we did anticipate it. We were well prepared. We actually met as late as Saturday morning to call a few audibles in our plan because of what was happening the day before. You can prepare for these things, but you never really know what exactly is going to happen. But I think given the outcome of Saturday night, I think we did pretty well in managing the crowd, despite the violence that we saw. And let me add one thing. You know, I met with the organizers of the protest Saturday afternoon, and the protesters who were following those organizers did exactly what they said they were going to do. They began at 5. They marched to public safety headquarters. They had a vigil, and they dispersed from there. Now, there was a subset of those folks who went back to Travis Park, and once it started getting dark, that's when the violence and the destruction started. So the organized part of the protest went very, very well, and the splinter groups that, you know, tried to destroy the city, that was a different story.
What kind of orders do the men and women of SAPD have when they're on the ground?
What type of orders?
What are the rules of engagement? How do they know that at this time we're adopting this posture? And then is there rules of as the situation changes, it's always fluid. How do they react? And what's their marching orders?
The marching orders are we respond with a lot of restraint, a lot of de-escalation tactics. It's not until the bottles start flying or the fires start being set that we will resort to measures to try to disperse the crowd. So when we need to disperse a crowd, when they start getting violent, when they start throwing bottles, bricks, and doing whatever else they do, it's at that point that we give orders to disperse. And if they don't disperse, we let them know that we're going to use a chemical agent to get them to disperse. If they still don't disperse, then we deploy the chemical agent, and we go from there.
So you go for these non-lethal measures to drive people out of this area that you need to regain control of.
That's exactly right, yes.
There were some arrests that were made. These were individuals who were what can you tell us about those?
We made a total of 6 arrests, which was pretty amazing for the level of violence that we had and as many people that were engaged in it. We made 6 arrests, and there were a variety of charges, from rioting to aggravated assault to unlawful carrying of a weapon, criminal mischief. There were those variety of charges that were leveled against those 6.
Now, of these at the Alamo Plaza, we have the presence of this militia group. They call themselves Texas Freedom Force. They're well armed, and they're able to do that under Texas open carry law, which requires that they do not point a weapon at anyone or use or adopt a aggressive posture. Correct.
Correct.
were they able? Were able, it seemed like they were pushing that line.
I'm not sure what makes you say that.
Well, they were using their weapons to push, you know, actually engage with others. And so there's reports that they were threatening to open fire and that they were adopting a aggressive posture with their weapons.
I was there. I did not see that, nor did I hear any reports of it.
And you were actively monitoring these individuals, making sure that they did not become overly enthusiastic with their weapons.
That's correct.
And if they had, what would have happened?
Had they done that, then there would have been an arrest.
And what would have been the charge?
Well, it would have been
disorderly conduct.
Disorderly conduct charge is what, if you're in violation of the open carry law, if you're carrying a rifle down the street and you take it off your shoulder in a manner that alarms people, that charge is disorderly conduct.
Okay. Many people are concerned that the SAPD, as you formed a human barrier between the Texas Freedom Force and the protesters, that they seem like the SAPD had their backs to the Alamo and to the Freedom Force. Their impression was that the officers were protecting or in solidarity with Freedom Force. I mean, can you clarify that?
No, there's nothing that could be further from the truth there. The officers faced the crowd that was being aggressive. They faced the folks that were throwing the bottles and the rocks. It had nothing to do with any kind of political ideology, which way they faced. They faced the way the threat was coming from.
Did y'all have a conversation, like you met with the protester leaders? Have you had an ongoing conversation with the Freedom Force militia members?
We met with I spoke with a go-between with the Freedom Force demonstrators and actually asked them to disperse and go home. And in fact, they did after a brief conversation.
What is the top priority for, in your view, what you want the police department to do on events like we had this weekend?
Our top priority when we have protests is to protect the protesters. The only time, the standing order that we have is when there's a protest, we are to remain away from that scene unless we're called because of a breach of the peace or any kind of destruction of property. The only time that they will see us during a demonstration is when we need to protect them against counter demonstrators or if we need to guide them through traffic. But otherwise, we stay away. We don't hover. We don't hang around waiting for them to do something. They are free to protest. Our job in that situation is to protect their First Amendment rights in every single case.
And finally, your reaction to the death of George Floyd, you called it murder. Do you still stand by that?
That was a tragedy beyond words. The watching that video was sickening. We don't teach that tactic. There is so much training that we have, and that is not one of the things that we are trained to do. Is put our knees on the necks of individuals. There's not one thing that I can think of that would mitigate what happened in that instant. There's not one thing that can explain and justify what those officers did. I condemn that action.
San Antonio Police Chief Wayne McManus, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you speaking to us about the events of this weekend.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And now we bring on the mayor of San Antonio, Ron Nirenberg. And Mayor Nirenberg, are you there?
I'm here, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing good. Tell me, first of all, how are you evaluating what happened over the weekend?
Well, obviously, our concern first is, to make sure that we protect the life and safety of our residents and those property owners, the businesses that have been damaged. But also that we can quickly remember that this was a peaceful demonstration throughout most of the day. And there was an important message of justice and reform that was trying to be delivered by the protesters. And I hope that that's the message that will resonate, not the actions of a few who wanted to, you know, disrupt and agitate.
What are you telling the downtown shopkeepers?
That we're with you, and I think that that's the message that they're receiving from the entire city. You know, it was a bit emotional, actually, to see the throngs of neighbors and people who were concerned for their safety and getting back on their feet that just descended upon downtown yesterday to help them clean up. I mean, people of all ages marched downtown literally to help people clean up. And I might add that, that those same crowds, that same kind of mix of residents who came downtown to help people clean up were the same kinds of folks you saw marching and demonstrating peacefully the day before. You know, we come together. We come together to help clean up. We come together to march for justice and reform. And that's the kind of San Antonio that we are proud of. And that's the solidarity that we're trying to express to the folks who have been hurt on Saturday night.
You put in place a temporary curfew for 6 p.m. for Alamo Plaza, 10 p.m. for the downtown district. That curfew ended at 6 a.m. this morning. Any plans to have to extend that to future days?
Not immediately. You heard it from the chief, the first and most important consideration during protests is that people can exercise their rights peacefully. And so that was the main concern. Obviously, if we hear that there's going to be some disruption, and then we'll reevaluate. But San Antonians, by and large, have always shown a tradition to speak out, but also maintain the peace. And we hope that we can continue to do that, and those tools aren't going to be necessary on any kind of regular basis.
We did have those militia members at the Alamo Plaza. Their presence seemed to be an aggravating part of what happened over the weekend, and why it may have broken out of a peaceful protest into something more more ugly. What are your concerns about having a armed militia occupying Alamo Plaza?
You know, it's unfortunate. It does tend to incite and aggravate speech when it's has that effect sometimes. And so that's one of the concerns, is that we don't have an escalation that turns into something violent. And so, you know, we hope that people can exercise their rights peacefully, and that, you know, people on different sides of debates can exercise their rights respectfully in the process.
These militia members also have been misinformed. They think that they're protecting Cenotaph from actually the city of San Antonio.
I'm sorry, say that again, Dave.
The militia members have said that they're protecting the Cenotaph from the city of San Antonio.
Well, that's our mission, is to make sure that we protect our property, our historic artifacts, our monuments. We do that every single day. So, yeah, that wouldn't be a concern that they need to have.
Do you see any policy alterations that need to happen based upon what we saw this weekend?
And what are you referring to?
Like any kind of directives? Were there any problems that you encountered? I imagine you were engaged the entire Saturday night with public safety officials figuring out what was going on, and any problems?
Yeah, no, again, I mean, I think if you look around the country, these the demonstrations are, proving challenging after the sun goes down and the peaceful protests start getting hijacked by people who have ill intentions. That's always a risk with events like that. And I don't think it necessarily means we've got to change policies, but I do think it means that we've got to be vigilant, and we've got to, protect the peace, protect people, make sure that we're sharing good information to, weed out any people that want to disrupt.
All right. We are. Thank you so much for joining us, Ron Nirenberg, mayor of San Antonio. We're going to open up the phone lines when we come back from the break, 833-877-8255. This is The Source.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the racial injustice protest that happened in San Antonio over the weekend, and we're now joined by some of the organizers of the protest. Camilla Factory is an organizer of the hashtag for Justice for Floyd protest and a co-founder of the hashtag Change Rape Culture. Camilla, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
We're also joined by Wolfgang, member of the hashtag Justice for Floyd protest with the Autonomous Brown Berets of San Anto. And Wolfgang, welcome to The Source.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So Camilla, tell me about organizing this protest. What were your expectations as far as the crowd turnout and how things proceeded? What were you, when you said we're going to do a protest, how many people did you think were going to show up and how it went down?
Initially, the organizing of the protest was a community event, reached out by Facebook, but we got an overwhelming response overnight. Thousands of people were expected by the next day before the protest to attend. So that's why we did our best to prepare with water for protesters, granola bars for protesters, first aid supplies for people who might have disabilities or might be ill. And so we definitely, tried to go about organizing this the best that we could, and we could have not done it without the community.
Wolfgang, tell me about your experience with the protest and what role were the Autonomous Brown Berets of San Anto were playing in that?
Well, first of all, I would like to say to Camilla, if ever at any time she feels the need to interject in this program, please do. Camilla's voice is the voice that needs to be heard the most right now. Camilla was the primary, person that brought the community together, and, we simply assisted her. Our goal with the Autonomous Brown Berets of San Antonio was to protect our relatives here. We have seen that Black people can be killed anytime, anywhere with impunity by police in the United States, and we needed to take a stand for the community, as well as for, the members of our organization here that are Black, who are fearful for their safety, which is, the reason why I'm here. They've requested me to speak on their behalf. We did not want to lose another Black life that day. We wanted to stand in solidarity with our Black relatives and give them a safe place for their voice to be heard. And I believe we did that.
I want to go to a caller, and this is Leticia. Leticia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me. I wanted to thank the organizers and just say that they did an excellent job of organizing the group. I don't think they expected to have thousands of people to show up, and they did the best organizing possible at Travis Park during the march, at the vigil, and going back. And I don't think anyone could have foreseen that. The event was ended at 7, around 7, and we were thanked and told to be safe, and events ended, go home. And for whatever reason, some people decided to go to Alamo Plaza, and that group over there had absolutely nothing to do with the purpose and cause that we were about. They had something totally different going on. So I don't know if maybe having the other group remain would have been wise on a day when protests were taking place nationwide I wasn't at Alamo Plaza, but I did see photographs of the defenders. They looked rather intimidating. They were protecting, they were defending, and that is the posture that they took. So I can see where people might have been intimidated by that.
All right. So Camille Factory, can you talk about the splinter group? That's not what you were put together, but these individuals were at Alamo Plaza. They did get in confrontation with this Freedom Force group, militia. That's not you, right?
I definitely said several times that, you know, the intentions were peaceful of this protest. We wanted to keep the focus on Black lives and how much they matter. We also had to keep in mind that we had to keep thousands of people safe during the march and before the march. But I will say that, you know, before we even continue this interview, we definitely need to give credence to Charles Rountree, who was murdered. And, you know, the officer that shot him was indicted. We need to talk about Marquise Jones that was murdered. Two unarmed Black men, Charles Rountree was sitting on his couch and shot. And so we just really, really need to talk about the rage and justify the rage of the Black community and justify the rage of the nation, because rage is beautiful. And it does speak volumes. But we definitely tried to make it clear to everybody that the intention of the protest was peaceful. I was definitely home when everything broke out.
But we've had law enforcement officers in San Antonio do things like give a homeless person a feces sandwich. And does that feed into that? Is that part of this as well, Wolfgang?
Well, what I would say is that, you know, to add on to what Camille was saying, I know we've seen, you know, Mayor Nuremberg and Chief McManus did have they had a midnight press conference, you know, during the nights of the action. A midnight press conference over a few broken windows. But we never saw a press conference whenever SAPD officer Steve Casanova killed 18-year-old Charles Rountree in 2018, or whenever Officer Robert Mancina killed Marquise Jones in 2017. The world is going to go on, certainly, after some broken windows at Whataburger and River Center Mall, but these families will never be compensated. And we still have yet to see any accountability for these officers who killed these two people in San Antonio for being Black. And that should indeed be the source of our outrage.
I'm going to take a voicemail. Kamala called in with this voicemail.
The peaceful march of thousands sponsored by the Brown Berets on Saturday afternoon did not lead to the unrest later that night. Please clarify that these events were not related. I was at the march in the afternoon. I heard the interviews with the planners, and I'm really concerned that people are not, that is getting short shift because we're focusing on the more violent things that were led to by all the guns out there and everything.
And Camille, do you see that we are being distracted by the guns and the militia, and that you want to keep the focus on, we do need a reform with accountability for police officers. We do have to address rolling back their immunity that they have in many cases. And we have to figure out how do we get citizen oversight for violence in San Antonio from police.
Well, I think it's certainly important to remember that we are approaching the midterm. We are approaching an election season. I think that it starts with voting. It starts with making sure that our offices represent our values and what we want to see. I also think that we definitely did what we could to organize the best that we could to make sure that we did not interact with the folk at the Alamo. We even rerouted the path to make sure that our protesters would not be distracted by any malintent, because our intent, once again, was on Black lives. And so I think we need to start asking, what does valuing Black lives look like? Because at this point, community is all that we have. All of the water donations, all of the oranges, all of the food, all of the community support was really what we had to mobilize. And so I just feel like this passive insinuation of labor on Black bodies, it needs to change. I think that there needs to be more heavy lifting from communities that say that they stand in solidarity with us and say that they support us. But, you know, people wearing out their Second Amendment, I think that is certainly a distraction from Black lives. And I feel that there are distractions from Black lives every single day.
I'm going to go to another caller. This is Paul. Paul, thanks for holding on, and you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to say that I was there at the Alamo when this all started. And I think the thing that people aren't really discussing is that the Freedom Force, they're a boogaloo group, and which is a right-wing organization bent on the Second American Revolution brought about by a race war. They went from Travis Park, or they went from the Alamo to Travis Park to goad people into following them. And it shows a complete lack of judgment and empathy on the part of the San Antonio Police Department. If they wanted to defend the Alamo from vandalism, they could have done so in a non-aggressive manner, but they chose not to on purpose. San Antonio is extremely lucky that it wasn't a bloodbath, and that's all I have to say.
Boogaloo group, they wear Hawaiian shirts. That's one of the ways that they signal what they are, and they adopt some of these pop culture phrases, and they seek to spark another American revolution. And we saw a lot of Hawaiian shirts at the Alamo Plaza among those militia members. So Wolfgang, as with the autonomous Brown Berets, the San Anto, how do you react to people who are trying to antagonize you?
Well, again, I'll reiterate that our goal on the day of the march was to create a safe environment for our Black community to have their voices heard. Our concern was not people with, you know, semi-automatic rifles trying to guard a building from graffiti. Our concern was people's lives being lost, and they were not a priority for us that day. Our route did not pass by them. They were indeed waiting at the Alamo to antagonize and to incite an altercation, which would have indeed, you know, been a detriment to the safety of everyone there. But again, our concerns here are that our black relatives are being killed with impunity by police. Our concern here is not spray paint. And you could see at our action, there was not crowds of people with semi-automatic rifles. This was a peaceful demonstration. And again, it was not a priority for us to have an altercation with a right-wing group protecting the Alamo from graffiti with automatic, semi-automatic rifles.
We're taking in a break. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're talking about what happened over the weekend, discussing racial injustice protests here in San Antonio. How do we move forward? How do we make sure the voice of the people is heard? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the protest in San Antonio over the weekend in reaction to the death of George Floyd. What happens next? What was the message that many of the protesters wanted to express? And was it heard? Our number is 833-877-8255. We have with us on the phones two of the organizers of the protest, Camille Factory, organizer of Hashtag for Justice for Floyd protest, co-founder of Hashtag Change Rape Culture, and Wolfgang. He was an organizer of the Hashtag Justice for Floyd, and he's with the Autonomous Brown Berets de San Anto. Let's go to the phones, and we have Susan. And Susan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking the call. I was just curious about why we need a militia when we have police and sheriff and park police, and we have a very good police department. So I'm not sure why we would also need militia I haven't ever seen that in San Antonio before, so I'll take my answer off the air if that's okay.
The Alamo actually has its own police force. They're called the Alamo Rangers, and they are law enforcement, and they have licensed police officers, and they are supposed to be guarding the Alamo at all times, and they're there. This Texas Freedom Force is a self-appointed group that has taken it upon themselves, and they have been drawn to a made-up controversy about the moving of the Cenotaph, and they have constructed a narrative about how this is somehow an affront to history, although it's not. So it seems like these are people who are, they're itching for a fight. I'm going to go to another caller. This is Mario Salas. Mario Salas, former San Antonio City Council member. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to be on the air. I just want to congratulate the people that put the march together, did a wonderful job, beautiful work. And one of the title of the show is Trying to Move Forward. I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about the Freedom Force, and I call them a vigilante group, and they are associated with hired thugs who were sent out to start fights. But the thing I think we need to concentrate on is we need to look at the Noble Cooper case, which is a case against the San Antonio Police Department where they actually used a knee to the neck. And that's a concern, because if a knee to the neck, officers are being told to do that, then that's a replacement for a chokehold. And it looks like that's what's going on. Now CNN reported that earlier today, that there's been many people placed in an unconscious state as a result of a knee to the neck. So the chief and whoever else is concerned needs to set the policy, no more knees to the neck. That brings us to the San Antonio police officer's contract, which needs to be changed in terms of the 180-day rule, roughly 180-day rule, where a police officer can get off from misconduct, because the statute of limitations on it runs out in a very short period of time, which is less than the two-year federal statute of limitations. So these things need to be corrected. We need to go to City Hall. That police union contract is corrupt, in my opinion. It needs to be changed. The other thing, too, is Matthew Luckhurst, the dog poop cop, should have been charged with a crime. You can't poison people with dog poop and think that that's not a crime. It's a crime. So the district attorney, whatever the outcome of that may be, he needs to file charges against Matthew Luckhurst. And so those are the concerns. The police contract, in my opinion, is the main concern. And going back to the Boogaloo Boys and the vigilantes at the Alamo, there is a way to keep them from coming down here, a self-appointed guardians of the Alamo. We don't need that. And there is a way to do it, and I'm looking forward to the City Council working on a legal way to prevent them from becoming self-appointed guards.
They, like, have them declared a public nuisance or something. Camilla Factory, are y'all looking at the police contract? Do you have a list of demands or issues, things that you want to negotiate with the city as a product of the protest?
Yes, absolutely. I want justice for Charles Rountree. I want to see that officer held responsible for killing a child who was sitting on his couch playing a video game. I want to see justice for Marquise Jones. I want SAPD to be held accountable for the things that they have done in the community. And so, you know, the list of demands start there. But Charles Rountree will not be erased. Marquise Jones will not be erased, and George Floyd will not be erased, and along with the other countless Black lives that have been lost. I also want to address ICE and the way that ICE raids have taken place in San Antonio. You know, there's no sanctuary for immigrants here in the community. And so we really, really need to start having more of these conversations about how violent, you know, these systems can be. So definitely, I do think that we have a list of demands, and I want to be liberated of, you know, and seeing those demands come to light.
We do now have joining us San Antonio City Council member from District 2, Jada Andrews Sullivan. And so, Council Member, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us what you want people to be the takeaway from these protests and what's happening in San Antonio.
First of all, I want to thank my city. I want to thank the residents of San Antonio. for showing what it means to actually stand up, speak up, and to do it peacefully. I know that there were some incidents that happened after the peaceful protest, but what it shows is that we as San Antonio definitely have a heart to speak to the issues. We don't need anyone to speak to those issues for us. We know what we have in our city. We are a cultural city. We are a city that demands respect, and we stand up for that. And so I first want to say thank you to those that came out to participate and to speak up and to speak out about something that has far too long been a source of a problem here in America as a whole. And so I want to say to them, continue to let your voice be heard. Continue to show what it means to move in dignity, respect, integrity, and continue to make sure that the issues that are closest to your heart are brought to the surface. This is an issue that doesn't touch just one life, but it touches all lives across the board. Because if there is injustice anywhere, then that means there's injustice everywhere. And that needs to be spoken to. We as the city of San Antonio have done just that. And I take pride in everyone that stood up, spoke out, and are continuing to say, let our voices be heard. But I'm also thankful for the leadership of San Antonio to say that we actually hear you. We understand your pain. We understand your anger. We understand why you have to speak out. This is not just a political thing. This is a humanitarian issue. And if one life is not treated like a human life, then all lives are not worth standing and sitting quiet. We have to speak. You have to be heard. Our lives matter. We as a community are so much stronger when we come together and we don't live on the basis of what our skin looks like. Now, that is the city of San Antonio.
You have two sons?
I have two sons.
When you see things like what happened to George Floyd, and this happens like every week or something like this going on, do you think about your sons?
I think about my sons. I think about my brother. I think about my nephew. I think about my friends. I think about my classmates. They all reflect that same image. And it could easily be someone here that we know. Too many lives are being lost. Too many of our men are being taken. And our younger men, our younger black men, need to know that they are part of a system that cares, and they need to know that they have people that see them for who they really are and their worth. That's what we have to change. And if it has to start here in San Antonio, then that's what we must do. We must make that change so that each and every last one of our young men know that they have someone that is standing for them and not kneeling on them.
And as we're running out of time right now, but I want to get back to Camille Factory, organizer for hashtag Justice for Floyd. What's happening next? Are there going to be other protests?
What's happening next is community solidarity, and whatever that looks like will come to fruition. But I definitely agree and resonate with the caller before me just recently.
That was City Councilperson Jada Andrew Sullivan.
Jada, thank you very much for your words, for your uplifting, just words of wisdom and passion. I stand with you, and I am doing this work to protect your sons and to protect their sons and to protect the future. But I definitely want to make it clear that it's not just black men that are being killed. It's black women, and it's black trans women, and it's black lives. So what that looks like moving forward is what the city will see.
All right. We're out of time. I want to thank you, Camille Factory, Wolfgang, also with the hashtag Justice for Floyd. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.